Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Now, who would have thought the question of what are we going to do for episode 200 would have even been a question that I had to consider in life? But it is, and we're still thinking about it, and we'll share with you the exciting details of what we end up doing. But we continue with amazing guests today. But first, a request, please. We've put over 100 videos now on the YouTube channel, and now we really need you to subscribe. The bigger the community, the bigger the opportunity for us now to expand the Leadership Enigma and continue to get amazing guests in. Just like this week, I have got an amazing guest. In fact, a guest who's already been on the show during the pandemic lockdown days. Do we remember those days? But it was always an episode that I wanted to do back in the studio because this is a very visual episode, because this is all about brand. And I remember someone saying to me, if you don't proactively work on your brand, someone else is doing it for you. You may not like the results. But when we talk about brand, perhaps it's personal brand, perhaps it's product brand, perhaps it's organizational brand. It can take years to build, and seconds to just destroy. Don't miss this amazing episode with Alison Stewart Allen with me on The Leadership Enigma. I'll see you in a second. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. So Alison, it's a massive warm welcome to the Leadership Enigma.
Thank you.
And a welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Thanks for the invitation.
Now, I've always been looking forward to this episode, but I haven't done any kind of intro because I know there are many strings to your bow. CEO, advisor, in fact, I see you more often on the television now than I do in real life. Whether it's on Sky News, and I know you're doing the papers for Sky in the morning as well. Yeah. You were often on The Apprentice. You've been fired.
Yes.
We'll come on to that.
Yes.
And you're an author as well. You do lots of things, Alison. Why don't you tell me?
I do. So I'm the author of a book called Working with Americans.
Yes.
Which usually gets laughs. Some tears, but mostly laughs. I advise companies on how to grow internationally, how to localize. And I create leadership programs, hence how appropriate to be here with you today talking about leadership, to really help leaders be better, but especially better in international settings. Because very often, you know, you might be really good in your home country, but as soon as you leave, maybe there's a few hiccups that need to be dealt with. So that's where I come in.
Well, and that's really the focus, isn't it, for this, that how can someone avoid a foreign fail? Or do people really understand the brand? Because we were just talking earlier before we went live on this episode that the show is building a brand. It's a brand around the podcast itself. And I suppose there's an element of a brand around me as well as the host. And sometimes either take that for granted or I'm not being deliberate about it, which is why even just the request for people to go on to YouTube and subscribe is me trying to be deliberate, because it's all been organic. And you know full well, this started out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
As in, what do I do? What do we do? How do we connect? And here we are, 180-something episodes
later. I know, it's fantastic.
Later.
Yeah, it's great. Congratulations.
So, well, thank you. Just tell me, how did you get into this area, though, of brands and the marketing piece and helping people understand what works in one region may not in another?
Yeah. Well, I did 2 degrees in international marketing. My undergrad in L.A., at USC.
That sounds exotic already.
My MBA with Peter Drucker, also in Southern California at Claremont. And international marketing's always been my thing.
Right.
I've loved it because I speak French and German. I was raised in Germany as a kid. I've been here in the UK now almost 36 years, and I really love cultural differences. But being capable in different parts of the world as a leader is not really that easy. And you see leaders and the brands they lead often making very fundamental mistakes. They make assumptions that the rest of the world is just like them, that other people are just like them, that other countries work the same way or structured the same way in business, and they mess up, and it's really expensive for them. So if I can help minimize the pain and help them get this stuff right from the very beginning, then that's the stuff I really get excited by.
And I know you brought some wonderful examples, which we're going to show in this episode. I'm looking excitedly at what you've got and the stories behind it. And I'm gonna try and tie in a number of leadership themes as we go. And you know how I am. We're unscripted, we're unplanned. We'll just have a curious conversation,
great,
which is the basis of the entire podcast. But already I'm thinking that a lot of leaders now, this is one of the power of diversity of thought and
yep,
having an incredibly eclectic and inclusive mix of people who can actually say, I'll stop you there. That's not going to work where I am from,
yes,
for a number of reasons,
yes,
rather than maybe sometimes the historic echo chamber.
Mm.
Yes, it's a great idea. Let's do it. And then suddenly something happens and it's completely wrong.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about, well, I don't know, where do you want to start? Give us a story or
yeah,
an example to kick us off so people understand where we're going.
Yeah, let me show you two things. And this is from Nestle. So these are two Kit Kat variants,
yep,
or brand extensions.
I think we're going to push them ever so slightly to your, there you go,
and
we can see that.
So one is strawberry and one is matcha green tea. Kit
right.
Kat. These are Japanese.
Okay.
Now, one of the things Nestle smartly, and this is a good example of what you should be doing as a company and as a good marketing company, is seeing how do we need to adapt what we do so that it's successful elsewhere.
Right.
In Japan, you can see this doesn't look like the Kit Kat bars that you buy here. And why is that? Because it's in a box, because it's a flavor that you would never sell in the UK. I mean, people would think like, strawberry Kit Kat? Seriously? No.
I'm wondering, what's that going to taste like?
Yeah. But also, more importantly, on the back is a space where you can write in a personalized note. So these are given as little gifts. So when you take an exam, your driving test, your school exams, you've graduated, there's something to celebrate, you can write a personalized note to your pal and give them this as a little gift.
Oh, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
It is really cool because it's a gifting culture. So this, I mean, you know, the price of this is probably no more than the equivalent of maybe £1 to £1.50 in Japan.
Right.
However, it's not about the price. It's about the fact that it's packaged this way, that it's an unusual flavor, but that it's giftable.
Right.
So Nestle smartly has adapted this range for Japan for those purposes. It doesn't work like that here.
And how old is that? How long have they been doing that?
Oh, 20 plus years.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. So it's something that's been going on for a couple of decades.
Uh-huh.
And again, is that something they thought, what would be appropriate within the culture,
yes,
of Japan?
Absolutely.
And how can we, in some ways, morph our product,
yep,
to be accepted. Was that what was going on?
That is what was going on. And all credit to Nestle for spending the time and money to create a version of their Kit Kat brand in this format.
So this is a really good example of a brand getting it right.
Correct.
And being something that's culturally appropriate.
Correct.
Help me understand, with the work that you're doing, what organizations or leaders need to be doing in the background before they end up with a good idea like,
yeah,
that? Because it doesn't just... Well, maybe it does just happen, but what's
going
on? What
a great question. That is actually the core of the work I do.
Okay.
Because you have to have a few things going on. Number one, you have to want to listen.
Yep.
And you have to, as you said a moment ago, you have to surround yourself with people that may disagree with you,
mm-hmm,
that may tell you things that don't fit your mental model about this is how Japan works.
Right.
Or any other market for that matter. So you have to surround yourself with people that may know more than you.
Yep.
That's good.
Never a bad thing.
Never a bad thing. You have to have curiosity and want to know that other places, and work on the assumption that other places aren't like your home market probably.
Right.
And you have to want to listen. And there are numerous examples, unfortunately, of leaders that don't want to listen. And when they don't listen, they make mistakes, they're unpopular, they disrupt the culture, they may last a really long time, unfortunately, in their companies.
Yes.
And they drive the business into the ground.
See, I knew there were going to be lots of leadership messages within the conversation that we were actually going to have.
Yeah.
So this is a good example.
It is a good example.
Do you have an example which perhaps hasn't quite been successful that you would like to pick? And well, feel free to rummage around because we've got a camera close up to you as well.
Well, I'll give you an example. And most of these are country-specific and why they wouldn't work elsewhere.
Okay.
So let me give an example. I mean, none of these have really tried to go into other places and then failed. But these are examples of why they won't work in other places.
Right, gotcha.
So this is a Canadian brand of fortified chocolate. You can see the name. You can say the name out loud.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
And it's an acronym. It stands for Seriously Helps You to Energize. And it's got added... It's got power. It's power packed with protein.
I hope, so James, I hope the studio is seeing this and having a giggle as well at this.
It's got added protein powder in with the cocoa and the chocolate so that it's more than just a candy or a chocolate bar. It's actually a functional food. Now, this is Canadian.
And is it selling successfully in
Canada? Absolutely.
Right.
But in niche places, right?
Right.
So this is not in supermarkets. This is in health food stores. And this is also direct mail order from the manufacturer.
So I'm just now visualizing myself walking into a store and saying, please, can I have a bag of shite?
Yes, exactly.
Which might be something to do with why it's not going to work here.
So that's exactly why it wouldn't work here.
And is there an acceptance that that is a region-specific product and that they're happy with that? Or was it a product where they thought, okay, that's worked in the region, but we haven't really thought about it?
I'm pretty sure this is not sold outside Canada.
Right,
firstly, if it was in the U.S., they wouldn't understand it because the word shite in America is just not used.
Right.
And Americans would just probably, because we're a literal culture, what you tell us, we believe you. You know, what you say is what we get.
Yep.
We'd be, oh, okay, that's a nice name. Great, I'll get some of that. We wouldn't affiliate it with the swear word.
Right, okay. So let's talk a little bit about brands. Anyway, anyone who's thinking about a brand for themselves as a leader who's rising through the ranks for a product or even a service that they're creating or for their organization, you know, and I said there is something going on here in relation to brand and I've not been deliberate about it. So it's happening anyway.
Yep.
What should leaders be thinking, and maybe an earlier stage than they think, what should they be thinking about brand? Generally and specifically? So that's such a wide question, but what are your thoughts, Alison?
Yeah, so I think leaders need to be aware that whatever they say and do at home is going to be played in every other country in which they have a presence. And therefore, it may sound like you have to dumb it down or make it vanilla and bland, not necessarily, but you can't say things that are inside jokes or culturally specific that won't work in other parts of the world. And there are endless corporate diplomacy mess-ups of leaders that say something to their home country, to their teams locally, and everyone winks and nudges and nods and goes, oh, yeah, we get it. And then it plays, let's say, in America.
Yeah.
And people, you know, think, oh, what does that expression mean?
Have you got a good example to mind that you remember or can share?
Yeah, I can share one. And it's interesting because it's a Japanese example. And right now, given what's going on with the post office and Fujitsu, this is extremely relevant now. So years ago, the Toyota car in the United States had brake problems and several cars would roll. Even though you set the handbrake, they would roll, or you'd hit the brake and it wouldn't stop, and you would rear end or another car, or you'd hit somebody. So there was a recall of Toyota's certain models. We're talking about probably 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And this recall was really expensive, inconvenient, but a number of people actually were injured and or died as a result of this design flaw of the car.
Yes.
So Congress hauled up Akio Toyoda, the founder, the chief exec of the car company.
Wow, okay.
Japanese. His English is okay, fluent enough. He was in front of tons of cameras from all the leading CNN and the world's broadcast media. And he very robotically said he was sorry for the deaths that arose and the injuries. and the robotic nature, the lack of empathy in the American culture
right.
that he displayed absolutely undermined everything he tried to do and everything that the company tried to do. So while on the one hand they took action, so action's good, mm-hmm. words are also good, the fact that he wasn't equipped culturally to do the empathy part
right.
that Americans need, we need you to show contrition, we need you to cry, we need you to wring your hands, we need voice modulation. We got none of that.
So there's no mischief to this at all, is it? It's just we're set in one way culturally.
Yep.
And it's very hard. In fact, anyways, he's being authentic.
You could say he's being authentic, but he's also being incredibly naive.
Because he's not equipped.
Because he didn't study, how am I going to be effective as a communicator and as a leader of this brand
yes.
with Americans who are watching this? Because the Americans need to see that you're really sorry. And the words, we're really sorry this happened, we are recalling the cars, blah, 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 you know,
and just didn't
it's not going to do it. It's really not going to do it.
So what kind of lessons can we pull out there from leaders as well? Because sometimes you're not the best person, and an individual leader is not the best person to...
Exactly.
To, is that the real
that's
lesson
part,
here?
Well, that's part of it.
Okay.
So part of it is absolutely right, recognizing there might be people better than you to deliver the message or to communicate the brand more effectively, number
yep.
one.
Yep.
Number two, you have to be willing to admit you don't know everything, that you should learn... Hey, if I'm going to get this message across to an American audience,
yes.
This is what I need to do for the American audience. Now, when I do this message in Japan, in Germany, in other cultures where high emotion is seen as unstable and a bit out of control,
yes.
then you deliver it a different way. But you either have to get advice and take the advice you're given, or you're going to make these kinds of mistakes. And Fujitsu's leaders, I mean, you know, it's a repeat. Only the other day, you may have seen that at Davos, the CEO of Fujitsu was approached about the post office issues here in the UK. For viewers that aren't familiar with it, long story short, there was a IT problem in the Fujitsu software. That Fujitsu software and hardware was in every British post office across the United Kingdom.
Yes.
And that flaw in their software meant that the managers of these post office branches had wrong figures when they turned on their machines. They reconciled at the end of each day their takings, and they were held to account, these managers of these post offices, for the shortfalls and had to pay personally for those. Now, Fujitsu has finally said, we have a moral obligation to
make
people, to reimburse people and to restore their reputations. When this CEO of Global Fujitsu at Davos the other day was approached about this, again, he was similarly quite stoic.
Yes.
And while that may work in some countries, that is just not working here.
So it's almost fanning the flames.
Absolutely.
Isn't it with it? And we're looking at, again, for people who are maybe looking and watching at this, listening and watching this internationally, we're looking at this potentially being one of the largest miscarriages of justice that we've ever seen in this country.
Correct.
So it is sizable. And,
yep.
and it's worth saying that many people actually were convicted.
Yes.
And imprisoned.
900 people were charged and convicted.
And the documentary's out right now. And I know that the dramatized documentary as well is out right now.
Yep.
And it's very much on the front pages, isn't
yes.
it? So again, how we interact, how we are perceived, how we're actually engaging and the impact that we're having on people, in many ways, leaders have got to be accountable for
it. Of course.
So some things perhaps couldn't be seen.
Yes.
And there are other things that could
yes.
have been seen.
Yes.
Give us another example,
Alison,
because I love these examples because we're going to keep finding the leadership lessons in each and every one. And I'm intrigued as to which one you go to next.
Okay, so this is the British digestive
yes.
biscuit.
Marvellous, with a cup of tea, right?
Absolutely,
look at that.
Right?
And in fact, it's got a beef eater on it.
It does. And this is the packaging in France.
Right.
So this is from, I have a cabinet of curiosities.
I know you do.
In my office, which is where these and several others reside. But this one struck me because they make clear these are English, not just by the iconography of the beefeater, but the French word sablé anglais.
Right.
So it's English. And one of the things when you read the notes on the backside, it tells you that you have to have tea with this.
Right.
That in Britain...
Quintessentially English.
Absolutely. That in Britain and England...
Yep.
That, you know, tea is the way we comfort people, and you have to have a good biscuit with your tea.
Right.
And it's basically almost like a cultural tutorial from the makers, McVitie's, on how you go about consuming this very English product.
Right.
Now, let me just... give you one example.
Thankfully, you're fluent in French.
So. I am, yes.
It's helpful.
So at the very bottom, so there's a lot of text that says, in the English tradition for over 100 years, discover these generous biscuits, and then it gives different features, like milk chocolate, so delicious. A biscuit with a tiny bit of salt, so unique. And then it says McVitie's is number one in England with the Union Jack.
Yep.
And then at the very bottom down at the text here, it says, yet another English folly. So in other words, the French would never believe that anything from England could taste good.
Right.
So hence, this is a folly that it's actually English and it even tastes good. In fact, alongside this campaign or this packaging, in the Paris Metro were ads like we have here in London in the Tube. Huge, you know, massive ads showing this cracker or biscuit, sorry. And it said, it's English, but it's good. So, I mean, the fact that McVitie's can actually make fun of themselves in the French market is also a sign.
Was that successful?
Totally.
Right.
Absolutely. This brand is doing very well. Not just with the expat community, by the way, of Brits living in France, but it's doing well amongst the French as well.
So almost taking the mickey out of themselves in order to play on, again, culturally, what would be received well in a European market.
Correct. But in France in particular, because the French really don't believe still, even though British and English food has improved hugely in the 36 years I've lived in this country.
Yep.
They still don't believe, well, if it's English, it can it be any good? So this plays on their bias.
So you and I have got the luxury of working with leaders all over the world. And I'm seeing a theme that some of the most successful leaders that I come across have all had international assignments or secondments.
Yes.
And they've moved themselves and their families around courageously, and they've been in different regions. And I think that is something that's very attractive when it comes to becoming one of the most senior leaders in an organization. Mm-hmm. But I'm also seeing, and help me with this, that those who haven't are now at a disadvantage. They've only worked in the United Kingdom, if they've only worked in America, is that a fair comment at the moment?
It depends on the company.
Okay.
If it's a British company, even though it might trade internationally, they may still think, well, it's okay.
So it's home
that
for
you
home
haven't
almost.
Absolutely. Right. That, you know, the fact that you've never lived abroad, you don't speak languages, that's okay because ultimately we're a British company.
Okay.
However, in today's world, as soon as you have a website, you're global.
It's true, isn't it?
So why wouldn't you need that knowledge of the rest of the world? Even if you're a local plumber. Well, maybe not a local plumber. That's not a good example. But you know, a UK company that pretty much all 90% of its sales are to other UK consumers or businesses. But you're on the web, so I could find you in California,
right,
in Sao Paulo, in Johannesburg. It doesn't really matter. I'm still going to find your business, and I'm going to take a view on, do they know what they're doing? Could I refer them to a friend of mine that lives in the UK that might want that service?
Yeah.
Does it
resonate, and does it mean the same thing?
But also, back to this point about as soon as you have a website, you're global.
Yeah.
One of the things that we know the British government's been working hard at and hasn't really done well, unfortunately, is trying to boost exports. It's really not, right. I mean, it's trying really hard. It's got the UK Export Finance arm that is funding your export commercially. So you get paid and you're not out of pocket and you don't have disrupted cash flow. You've got the Department for International Trade,
yep,
or BEIS, the Department for Business, trying to also encourage more British companies to export.
Yep.
The amazing quality in this country of thinking, creativity, products and services is remarkable and completely unsung and completely underexploited around the world. But you have to educate the business leaders here that the opportunity globally is worth you learning about different cultures to exploit it. And that incentive, that inspiration, I think, is really missing.
I want to deal with this in almost small, medium, and large.
Okay.
So it's really relevant. We've just about finishing the website for the Leadership Enigma. So immediately I'm thinking, actually, how would that be seen and perceived in Brazil, in Japan, in, we're trying to get the podcast, by the way, into China.
Good.
We've got to go through, we can't go through the normal platforms.
Yep.
We've got to go through something called Zimalaya. We're trying to work that out. So anyone who knows how to do that, contact me, please. But work in progress. So I'm thinking to myself, that's interesting, because I've written this in a way that I think is appropriate,
yep,
for a corporate, maybe international audience, but
okay,
not wholly international.
Okay.
So if I'm a small business, I'm a startup, what should I be thinking now? Because I can fall into a faux pas, can't I? I can fall,
yeah,
into it in a way where I just didn't know that that meant that in,
yeah,
a different culture. What could I be doing as a leader of a small, medium business right now?
So I think the content of your future podcasts,
yep,
might want to include examples from those markets.
Okay.
Because relevance is what people take away from this.
Yes.
So if they see you're talking about BYD, Build Your Dream, the biggest electric vehicle company in the world, pretty much. It's about, I think from the, what I just read, they're about to eclipse Tesla,
right,
as the world's biggest EV.
Where are they?
They're all over China.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it must be the China market.
Yeah,
right?
But that, in numbers terms, that's a massive market. But of course, they're looking at growing all over the world. They're making inroads, pardon the pun, with these EVs,
yeah,
in other geographies.
Right.
So perhaps the link is, how do we build in examples from outside the UK so that viewers in China, in America, in other big countries and markets can see, oh, right, I get it. This is relevant.
Well, I think you're making us wholly internationally relevant in this episode. That,
thank you.
That's for sure. And if I'm a lot of the time we spend working with some of the biggest businesses in the world,
mm-hmm,
hundreds of thousands of people in there. Errol Gardner was in last week, so EY, 400,000,
yep,
people, I think,
yep,
154 countries. This is global reach.
Yep.
Wow, how do you control that? I mean, again, if we're thinking some of the iconic brands.
Yep.
Yeah, what do you do then?
What you do? It's, in a way, it's back to listening and being prepared to adapt to different countries.
Right.
I'll give you an example.
Okay. I do love the examples.
A very good friend of mine works in a media business.
Okay.
That's a global media business, but it's an American headquartered company. And unfortunately, they have to downsize by X percent in the geographies all over the world.
Right.
So my friend, an American, has responsibility for markets outside America. And because of her international media experience, she knows that when you make people redundant or you have to let them go, layoffs, you can't just take the American approach, which is we read the lawyer's script to,
right,
the person we're about to let go with no empathy. And we have a witness in the room just in case things get a little bit out of control.
Yep.
And we read this low empathy full of acronyms and
legalese,
jargon. And meanwhile, this person you're about to let go is in tears and is thinking, I'm going to lose my house. And you're being the robot and reading all the American legal stuff. And that process is, of course, how it works everywhere, isn't it? And then when you say, well, actually, this is really bad for our brand if this is how we lay people off outside of America, because they will tell all of their friends, do not ever work for this company that just let me go. They're terrible. They didn't do this. They didn't do this. They showed no empathy. Empathy is the key thing.
We're coming back almost to the Japanese example,
totally, yeah,
of lack of empathy and a criticism,
yeah,
for, and they're doing the same thing.
I know.
Right.
And this is assuming, again, what works here at home works everywhere. How we lay people off in
one
America.
One size fits all, and
absolutely,
it doesn't.
Absolutely. Yeah, and by the way, in Germany and many other parts of the world, you have to consult the Works Council. You have a consultation process before you let lots of people go.
Right.
And so, we hadn't thought about that at American HQ. Gee, that's going to delay our plans by several months. What are we going to do now? Well, you probably should have thought about that before.
So straight away, I'm thinking, you know, we hear the term global local, that you may actually have a global HQ, but you really need to make sure you've got the local businesses empowered to guide and advise you on what works. Is that a fair comment?
Yes, although they may be trying really hard to guide and advise you, and you're just not listening.
Right, back to listening again.
Yeah.
Okay. Go on, give us another example, because I know we've got some more on. I know. I'm trying not to rush to the examples.
Okay,
Allison.
Well, here's a cultural one.
Okay.
Okay. This is a candy bar that sells in America.
Yep.
And it is called Fast Break.
Okay.
Now, in contrast to Kit Kat, where the marketing of Kit Kat here in Europe and the UK is, have a break, have a Kit Kat.
We've grown up with that messaging.
Yeah. Get out of the office, go enjoy the candy bar, take a break, walk around the block, leave your desk.
Yes.
Enjoy. In America, you better not leave your desk. Don't even think about having a long break. In fact, you're going to have a fast break because you need to get back to work. So this exemplifies the emphasis in the U.S. culture that having a break is kind of like, oh, really? I don't think I can really do that. People will think I'm slacking and not doing the job. So at least I can kind of sneak a candy bar at my desk, and it's called Fast Break. So luckily I can do it quickly.
All right. And that's been successful in the U.S.
It certainly is.
And again, it's a real compare and contrast with the Kit Kat.
Totally.
So the branding or the messaging, have we seen Fast Break in this country?
No, it's an American product only.
And again,
would it work here? But that's the point. Would this work here? Definitely not, because people would think, why would I want a fast break? I want a break. I don't want it fast.
And they're synonymous with the take a break, have a break, have
exactly.
a Kit Kat. Why? Okay.
Yeah.
There's another one behind.
Yes.
Go on.
Okay.
Whilst we're on a roll.
So this is funny. So this is a cracker brand. These are with honey. And I picked these up when I was recently on business in Malaysia, in Singapore, actually. This is a name, Tosh. Now, in British slang, it's Tosh, means it's garbage, it's rubbish. So what's the point? The point is that it may work in Malaysia or it may work in Singapore, which is great, but would this work in this country with that name? Totally not.
Right.
So if this manufacturer wants to come here with this brand, they would have to rename it.
Gotcha. And do you know examples of brands that have deliberately renamed or repackaged in order to be appropriate?
Yeah, I'll give you a great example.
Okay.
So there is a inflammation gel.
Right.
Which is called Voltarol.
Yes.
Here in the UK.
I know it.
In Europe, Voltarol.
Yep.
Okay. And in the States, it's called Voltaren.
Voltaren.
Voltaren,
okay.
Not Voltarol. Now, why would that be? Possibly because they couldn't secure the name in America, because Voltarol was already seized as a name and owned by a competitor or someone else. Or in market testing, Americans would think how do I say this?
Right.
Whereas maybe with Voltaren, you know how to say it.
Wow, so it can be as nuanced as that then.
Mm-hmm. The branding's exactly the same. The colors, the packaging, everything's the same, the iconography, but the name in test may not work.
So is that what this is about? Testing, being curious, listening, and leveraging people who are in the area, who have lived there, who
have
been immersed in it to say it's not going to work.
Absolutely. And just imposing your HQ policies and templates on the rest of the world, never going to work.
Can you think of a modern day example of someone doing it very well? That the curiosity, the listening, the humble inquiry.
Yeah. I mean, this is a bit of a bittersweet example, but I'd say Volkswagen.
Okay.
Now, why do I say bittersweet? Because in America, the defeat device built into Volkswagen cars. So they were sued by the Environmental Protection Agency within the last few years for having a chip in the engine of their cars,
yes,
in order to show that the emissions from their cars was lower than it really was.
Right.
So not great. However, when they introduced the Beetle model into the U.S., they spent millions of dollars to change the assembly line and retool the assembly line,
right,
to accommodate the American penchant for the cup holder.
Right.
So when we drive, we will drink probably a very large drink. Could be a coffee. Could be a Slurpee.
I think that's the big gulp.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. So in their testing, yes, Volkswagen learned that their European cars didn't have a cup holder.
Right.
Wasn't a big deal. But for Americans, this was a deal breaker.
Right.
We are not going to buy that car. Where am I going to put my drink? So Volkswagen went back to the assembly line and back to the drawing board and thought, okay, we have to do this. So they had to move the manual transmission, especially in those cars,
yeah,
not the automatics, but move the stick shift back a few inches for the pop-out cup holder to feature.
Wow.
So that's good. That's local adaptation. That's good.
So we talk a lot now about leaders having to do two things simultaneously. Inside out is the ability to really focus on the role that they have and drive high performance day to day. And outside in,
yeah,
to be able to really understand and sense make external trends.
Yep.
And I think we're talking about some of those,
yep,
in order to bring that sense making into the business, mm-hmm, which then may educate them for their product or service.
Yep.
What advice or thoughts have you got for leaders? Because senior leaders have got to do that simultaneously.
I know.
And that's so hard.
I know.
And in the pandemic and during rapid change, which we're in, most leaders say to me they're spending 80 to 90% of their time just being inside out.
Yes,
just,
correct.
Just keep the lights on, deliver, and do what you've got to do.
Yep.
And I appreciate this year we're going to have, is it the year of the most global elections ever?
Yes.
So we're already preparing for seismic change again.
Yep.
Long-winded question, Alison, forgive me. Thoughts in relation to the senior leaders, or so the architects of a strategy, being able to do the inside out and the outside in at the same time?
Yeah. So I think they have to recognize that the role of leadership,
yes,
is both of those things.
Right.
I don't think a lot of leaders recognize the importance of the outside in as much as they need to. They measure their own success often by metrics that don't include outside in.
Right.
So let me use a phrase from the U.S. that's probably not so popular here called eat your own dog food.
Right. Okay.
If you're a dog food maker, if you're an airline, if you're a restaurant chain, you really need to see and consume your product just like your consumers do.
Right.
You need to ride an economy on the aircraft if you are the CEO or a senior leader of an airline.
Yes.
And see what is that experience like. And I don't think too many board members of the airlines I know do that very often.
Okay.
Or sit in the restaurant if it's a fast food restaurant and see, gee, what's this experience like? Something's wrong here. This touchscreen stuff, it's really inhuman. It's not working.
I'm thinking
with
of the program Undercover Boss at the moment.
There we
where
go.
They
exactly
tend to do that kind of
exactly
thing.
Exactly. Or Back to the Floor was another,
yes,
one. And we need a lot more of that. The other thing I think leaders do is they get caught up in the operational far too much and don't recognize that they are ambassadors. As a C-suite leader especially,
yeah,
your job is to be the ambassador for this business. You need to work the stakeholders. You need to work the industry association. You need to keep the media on side. You need to be looking up and out, not down and in. And unfortunately, too many leaders are looking up, down and inward. Now, how do you change that? Well,
yep,
you give them different incentives.
Okay.
Maybe part of their performance measurements are about testing with stakeholders. How well do you think our leaders are engaging with you? Now, if you asked the media, if you asked shareholder groups, if you asked investors that question,
yep,
I'm sure you get pretty eye-opening results about the leadership of the business, like, oh, we never hear from them. Oh, they never show up. Oh, they don't talk to us. They don't take our calls. They don't answer our emails, and on and on. So I think measuring those behaviors means you get those behaviors I mean, you're in this business as well. You know very well that what gets measured often gets done.
Yep.
So if we measure leaders on external and up and out behavior, then they'll deliver it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know that you are on the news a lot, and so I'll be looking out for you on Sky tomorrow. But with that, with the work that you're doing, and you are being asked to do a lot of public broadcast work too, are you seeing a difference since the pandemic? Have things got worse? Have they got better? Or are they just different? What are you seeing or sensing?
Yeah, I think I think we're in an era where the future of work,
yes,
which is a great phrase, I think, because there's now a recognition that the world of work has changed and is changing really quickly.
And it's never going back to
and
how
it was.
And
it is never going back.
Agreed.
No. So I think what I'm seeing in my own clients, many CEOs, of course, they're trying to navigate this new future of work. You know, they're at the level, unfortunately, now of, oh, should they come in the into the office 3 days a week? Should they work from home? You know, that's not the question. That's looking at the wrong question. The bigger question they ought to be asking themselves is, we've got a bunch of really talented people in our business, and we're probably not getting the most out of those people. And whether they work from home or they work in the office or they work different hours, that's operational. What you ought to be asking is, how do we keep these really smart people? How do we invest in making them smarter? And that gives us competitive advantage because we've got the smarter people than our competitors. We're empowering them more than our competitors. We're letting them make mistakes and experiment and fail. Good. We're creating a culture where they like working for us and they want to be here. Mm-hmm. Those are the questions that leaders ought to be asking themselves, not, oh, you only did a 39-hour week this week. Oh, I've made a note of that. You know, that level of management, we should be way past that era now.
Times have changed, haven't they? And I had Rachele Fakadi in, who was talking about the multi-generational aspects, which I think you're alluding to as well with that. And we're going to have five generations working in an organization, which is in itself both challenge and opportunity. We've got time for one more example.
Okay.
So what are you going to... I think you've got two left. So you're gonna,
I have
you're
a gonna, couple.
You have a couple. Right, you have to choose now, Alison.
Okay.
I love this.
I'm going to choose these two. Okay. Right. This item,
yes.
I feel like I'm on QVC.
Right.
This item sells today.
Can I just say, you may want to consider this, right?
So this is a Body Shop product from Japan.
Right.
And it's a body mist. And it's Spa Wisdom Japan Apricot and Rice Finishing Mist. It smells fantastic.
Okay.
It doesn't last very long.
Okay, let me have a smell.
You may not get full...
I'm going to try.
See if you can get a sense of it.
I get a sense of that.
Yeah,
okay.
Light floral.
Yeah.
Now, why is that relevant? Because in Japan, perfumes need to be really light, almost unnoticeable.
Right. Delicate.
Very delicate because of the dense population.
Right.
Because on a underground train in a packed office,
yes,
if you've got something like opium, Yves Saint Laurent, or I think it's YSL.
Something that's
Christian Dior.
Right, okay.
Opium, right? It's like really strong. You can smell it, the trail for even walking down the street, you can smell it on people.
Right.
You have to be aware that that will never work in Japan.
Okay.
So this is really smart on Body Shop's part to adapt to that market with something that's apricot and rice that plays well to the Japanese consumer, female consumer especially. That's who is the target of this product.
Gotcha.
And I think this is a good example of localization.
Gotcha.
This is just one of my little...
I'm laughing
fripperies.
Already because I could see the name. Well, you'll hold it up for the camera in a minute.
Yeah, it doesn't sell outside of Scandinavia, but
right.
It is a chewing gum called Sorbits. Now, obviously in the UK, that is a hilarious name.
Yeah.
Thankfully, this product is not here, but I pick up stuff where I think, you know, good for this company, but isn't it entertaining? And could this ever work here? Absolutely not.
Right.
The other quick example, which I don't have with me, but I have in the office, years ago when Carphone Warehouse, the retailer of mobile phones,
Remember them well.
Yeah, when they, in their early days, they had a branch.
They were
in,
huge.
Massive.
Yeah.
And they had a branch in Victoria, near Victoria Station, and my office is there. And I walked in, and I was thinking, oh, I'll have a look around. And then I notice on the wall near the door a roll that you pull off, almost like, you know, when you go to a butcher shop.
Yeah.
And you have to take a ticket.
Yes.
And it has a number on it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This is the same idea. It was on a roll, and you pull it out, pull off the sticker, and you could put this badge on your jumper or jacket.
Okay.
And it was a big picture of a fly. It, with big text around it that says, don't bug me, I'm just browsing. And I thought, oh my God, can you imagine, like, in the United States, someone putting a sticker on that says, don't bug me, I'm browsing? It would be, please bug me, I'm browsing.
Yeah.
So the fact that the consumer finds people coming up to them in a retail environment.
That's a cultural thing as well, isn't it?
Totally fascinating, because I thought, why wouldn't you want someone to come up and say, can I help you?
Well, there's a whole story in relation to customer service as well, isn't there?
That's the next episode. That's another.
Listen, Alison, I always love talking to you, and I'm so grateful for you coming in and bringing some wonderful. How do people get in touch with you so they can continue the conversation,
yep.
get you into their organization
yep.
so they can avoid that foreign
Absolutely.
Fail?
Absolutely.
How?
So two ways.
Yep.
One is I have a speaker website. AlisonStewartAllen.com.
Right.
And I have a company website, International Marketing Partners.
Okay.
If they Google that, they will find me, and they will find the URL. IntMarketingPartners.com is the website. So I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm also Muse of Marketing on Twitter.
I can see there's lots of
X,
things coming
I should
up
say,
now.
X. So yes,
you're all over the place, aren't you?
I'd love to hear from your viewers.
All you need to do is to put Alison's name into Google, and away you go. I think there you go. It's all there. What I'll do is I'll add some of those details into the show notes as well.
Good.
So they've got that. And I just want to say again, thank you so much for coming back.
It's a pleasure.
But coming back to the studio, this was always going to be, I think, brilliant in relation to the subject of the conversation and what you've done there.
Thank you for the invite.
Alison, you're a superstar. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Adam.
All right. Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.